This is the Center Maryland, the Lobby Pod, and really one of our most extraordinary guests we've had on this. I know everybody in this audience is an obedient follower of our guest today. Jeff Salkin is one of the most experienced voices in public television throughout the country. He's been doing news and reporting for Maryland Public Television since 1991. He is, I gotta say this, as a Mount St. Joe graduate. He is a graduate of Baltimore's Gilman School and the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania, is where he got his bachelor's. But he has, he's earned his doctorate in Maryland governance and politics by really being sort of a sentinel of fact and information and transparency throughout his career. And it's somebody that everyone in Maryland politics knows that that you can't influence or you can't make him a partisan. Jeff Salkin, thanks for the last 30 years. Is it 30?
Yeah, it's actually, this is my 30th year of hosting State Circle on MPT. Of course, this is the big 40th anniversary celebration for State Circle. And thank you for the kind words.
Well, Jeff, I think a lot of us saw that video of the 40th anniversary celebration for MPT and State Circle. And while some of the voices and names have changed throughout the year, there is a very discernible ethic about the program. And I'd love for your input on what you think that is that makes it special.
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, I think, you know, we try to cover the news. It's that basic. We don't try to be the encyclopedic program of record. There are other outlets that do that. But over the course of the 40 years, the original idea was came from the MPT executive who hired me, who of course is therefore one of the smartest people I've ever met. Gentleman named Everett Marshburn, who's in Milwaukee now, but he hired me. He hired over the years Sue Copen, who works with us, Charles Robinson, who works with us, and they had experimented for a couple of years doing State House Roundup kind of programs, and decided to brand it in 1982 as State Circle. The brand itself, you're an insider. You know why it's called State Circle. I wonder if there are a lot of people who don't quite get the name, but, you know, we've been using it for 40 years, so I think it'll stick. So, you know, we try to get the big story of the week. We try to cover some other things that are of interest to our reporters. We try to do little mini debates where that's an appropriate way to show what an issue is all about. And we've broadened the show. Originally, it was just a legislative wrap-up, and they actually went off the air when the legislature adjourned sine die. The program adjourned sine die, not to return until the following January. Maybe about 20 years ago, we realized that we were kind of assembling an audience and then leaving them hanging. So we turned it into a year-round program. And in the interim, the interregnum where the legislature is not meeting, we're all about issues, candidates, and looking at Maryland outside of State Circle, getting around the state a little bit.
There seems to be a quality about the programming that is sort of a just the facts kind of approach. And it doesn't, you know, so in other words, you get to see these very prominent people in the Maryland governance space, but they're not being asked to opine about sort of political situations. They're really talking about what is being focused on at the moment by the legislature, by the governor. And that gives such a different quality of news that we may only recognize from a Judy Woodruff at NewsHour, but it's certainly much different than what we see at Fox and Jay-Z and some of the DC stations. Any thoughts on that?
I think local news in general is far less partisan than what you see on the national news. And PBS and the News Hour. Judy Woodruff is our lead in, and Jim Lehrer and Gwen Ifill before Judy. And they strive to hit the ball down the middle of the fairway, as do we. And it doesn't guarantee that we always succeed in that. Nobody's, bats 1,000, but we do try really hard to see issues from all sides and to report with impartiality. Somebody told me early on when my career had been in commercial news and wound up at MPT, and somebody told me that, people have different opinions about media bias in public media and commercial media, but that state licensee public broadcasters. So that's the opposite of a community licensee, where there would be a station serving a particular city. State licensees, which rely on state government for a bit of their funding, tend to be conspicuously nonpartisan. And that's obviously served MPT well, as state government has gone from control of one party to split government and back, and then back to divided government. I think having a reputation as an honest broker is crucial, and it's crucial when we're setting up political debates. One of the key services we provide as the only statewide broadcaster is to try to bring candidates together for political debates, so viewers and voters can have a head-to-head comparison before election day. And it'd be a lot more difficult to do that if we didn't have all these decades of being nonpartisan and impartial.
I'm telling you, everybody's got to check out this video of the last 40 years of State Circle. Jeff, you'd be proud of me. Over the last couple of weeks, I've been sort of time stamping it and showing people where they are in the video. So I said, Joe Bryce and Krista Jones, the Joint Chiefs of Staff of you guys own the 2-minute mark.
That video just blows out of the water the idea that a couple people have tweeted that I don't age. It's very clear from the history of State Circle that I'm not the same 30-year-old guy who showed up there.
Talk to me about that. So I'd love to hear a little bit about your career arc. You came out of a very prestigious school in Baltimore and then went on to an Ivy League institution in Pennsylvania, Penn. And then you were in commercial news. Talk to me about, or how did you make the decision to get into news? I always thought I wanted to be a reporter in college. And then I found out about that thing called deadlines, Jeff. So
they had those in college too, right?
They had them in college. So I'd love to hear about how you kind of made that move, because I think people like, I think we may have more in common than maybe we'd expect, because we both are probably fascinated by the public sphere and the interaction of leaders in that public sphere and the reporting back to the community. To make a choice to go with public television and then to stick it out for 30 years, where essentially, I think the voters are coming to you. You probably started in a place where X number of voters were Republican, X, Y number of voters were Democrats. Today, you see more and more people moving away from parties and towards sort of an independent posture. And that's right where you are. So love to hear about your growth arc.
Yeah, the journey started when I was very, very young. I'm told that as a little kid, 3 or 4 years old, I would sit there and watch Walter Cronkite read the CBS Evening News, and I was fascinated by it somehow. And the memory I have is of Cronkite every night reporting the casualty counts from Vietnam. So that fed into it. When I was in high school, I was, sort of the typical editor of the high school newspaper, was in the political science club, actually took a day off in high school to go watch the Marvin Mandel trial at the Garmatz. Beautiful. Yeah, that's a little bit geeky, but that's sort of where the interest
was. Nick Schloeder involved in
absolutely
any of that?
Nick was the faculty advisor to the Political Science Club. Of course, he was an advisor to Senator Paul Sarbanes. And he taught history and politics. He was fabulous, really was. And maybe, you know, sparked and nurtured some of that interest in politics. I had gotten hired in high school at a radio station on Lexington Street in Baltimore, WITH. I don't know how I got hired. The station had fallen on hard times. That was part of it. It was a station that had been a hot top 40 station in the 50s and 60s. And when I got there, they were playing elevator music. But one of the things we did on Lexington Street, we were like three blocks from City Hall in Baltimore. And the mayor of Baltimore, Don Schaefer, would walk up the street and do a call-in show, which I remember engineering, you know, in the late 1970s. So that, you know, that interest was always there. I'd never fancied myself an interviewer. I wanted to be the news guy who reported and read the news. And the interviewing thing just sort of developed once I got to MPT.
It's hard to interview you may have seen me show everybody the hard way.
You know, listen, you're a natural. I mean, you've got the gift of gab, and I think people may wonder, how can anybody say that it's hard to do an interview? You're just having a conversation, which everybody on the planet can do.
That's true, but I'm also, you know, we've got a very smart audience. You have a very smart audience, and we're trying to figure out these people are gracious enough to listen to us for 30 minutes.
True. It's,
you know, I got to give them some good stuff.
And there's that pressure to deliver. It's reading the news is a lot easier than doing an interview show. When you're the news reader, you drive home from work and you think, that was a pretty good show. There really wasn't anything I'd do differently. When you're doing an interview show, you never drive home feeling fully satisfied with it because there are so many different points of divergence in the interview. Why didn't I follow up this answer with that question? How did I not hear when the interviewee said X? But the truth is, you're trying to concentrate on a lot of things at the same time, and my brain in particular isn't really set up for keeping multiple thoughts in my head at the same time, because you have an idea where you want to go with the interview. You know, as Mike Tyson said, you know, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth, and no interview plan really survives the answer to the first question. So immediately you're zigging and you're zagging and you're trying to listen, but you're also trying to get your plan back in shape. It's tougher than you think.
So if you were doing an interview with Speaker Jones, how would you prepare for interviewing Speaker Jones? You've seen her. She's been on your show for 30 years. She's been around Baltimore County and Annapolis for just as long. But she's in a whole new role. So I'm interested to how you go from.
I'll tell you this. I over-prepare. And I do that as a result of a traumatic, terrible interview that I did at that little radio station in 1978. The FCC used to require broadcasters to do a certain amount of public interest broadcasting. So you could play top 40 records, you know, all week, but on Sunday morning you needed to do something. And the something at this station was a little 15-minute interview show. I was the new guy, so I was asked to do an interview with had to go at least 15 minutes, and it was with the spokesman for the American Mustard Association. It's hard to believe there was such a thing. And with no notice, I had to sit down in the studio and come up with 15 minutes of discussion with the spokesman, who was perfectly good. I was totally inexperienced, had no idea what I was doing. And it was a classic scene. It was like right out of the movies where time slows down as I'm realizing I don't have 15 minutes of stuff to talk to this guy about. I mean, I'm asking basic questions about, you know, what's wrong with these people who put mustard on hamburgers? I don't get that. But the clock on the wall is slowing down. It finally stops. You know, it's gone backwards. And I had to stop the tape because I was out of ideas. And it was a great lesson in needing to prepare. I didn't have the opportunity to prepare for that one. I was surprised by it. But there's a terrific book, Jack Valente, the late head of the Motion Picture Association, Lyndon Johnson's spokesman.
That would be an easier interview.
Absolutely. He could talk. He was a treasured after dinner speaker in Washington. And his book on public speaking basically says just that you got to over prepare for a speech. You don't try out any new material when you're in the big ballroom. You've got everything worked out in advance, but then he said you wing it. So you over-prepare, maybe you have some notes, but you don't have a script. And I think that's the way to do interviewing. You gotta over-prepare, you gotta think through, you know, what are the key topics to hit? What are the answers likely to be? Then knowing that as soon as you start talking, the plan goes out the window. And that, you know, maybe it's a little like being a quarterback. I don't know. But it is more challenging than people would think.
In your Maryland public television experience, who were some of the interviewees you were most fond of?
Oh, that's a good one. Well, we've had a lot of fun. I mean, I really treasure the opportunities to do fun stuff. We got to interview, there was a Maryland-born astronaut on the space station. And we got to do a live interview with him via satellite hookups from the space station. That was just cool. And that's the sort of thing where, you know, you have a bunch of questions and there's the time delay. So that's not going to be a great, you know, back and forth off the cuff thing. It's a little bit more structured. I like the fun stuff. I like the, you know, we did a show remote from a duck pin bowling alley once, and we're just talking to people, you know, bowling for half an hour. And that's really a good time. We did a, it wasn't a half hour. We did half a show remote from a nudist colony near Annapolis. There's a nudist camp that's been there for a very long time. We have a TV tower in Crownsville. If you're on I-97, you see the big TV tower. That's MPT's tower. And I was told that engineers had, you know, been up there rigging equipment and looked down and seen these, you know, naked people running around. The thing is right at the base of the tower. They wanted publicity. They were trying to expand their membership. This is why, in contrast to the bowling alley, I did not go to the nudist place. I'm back at the station. We had a remote crew at the nudist camp, and it's just fun. I mean, I enjoy that. And one of the things through the pandemic, you know, we're talking on Zoom, and there's a lot of pros and cons of Zoom. It's easier to reach people. Nobody's driving anywhere. But I do miss the human contact of getting around the state, and I hope we're back to that really soon.
Jeff, Annapolis is a very collegial place. It's tough to be independent or disconnected down there. Do you feel like your Owings Mills studio gives you a bit of an appropriate distance from the hustle bustle of Annapolis, or has being in that part of Baltimore County, has it been a struggle covering Annapolis?
Well, that's an interesting question. You know, for the last 2 years, I've been covering Annapolis pretty much from my home.
I mean, right.
You know, everybody's locked down, and it's MPT crews that have been doing the new live streams of the House and Senate, which I'm sure you're finding and everybody in the political world is finding are just hugely helpful. That, I mean, you can see what's happening in high quality. I think that's actually sort of counteracts one of the trends you're seeing in the press room there, where there are far fewer reporters from regional publications making the trip to Annapolis, certainly not being stationed there for 90 days anymore. And thankfully, they can cover it pretty effectively remotely. I've not spent enough time there to have ever been sort of in the social circuit. Our
you've seen some of the commercial reporters, and you know, it gets very chummy, and that makes their job more difficult. It doesn't mean they can't do it, but I just what you've always had a sort of a graceful distance between the culture and your coverage, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, you know, the old saying is when you're a reporter, you can be friendly with politicians in particular, but you can't be friends. And you have to have a certain amount of distance. Our great friend, the late Lou Davis, was a fixture in Annapolis, and he didn't live that far away. When he was at Channel 2 for so many years as their Annapolis bureau chief, he was there all the time and socialized with people, and for that reason had terrific sources and got great scoops all the time. And Lou was a pro. I mean, he had been at NBC News. He covered Vietnam. And he had no trouble putting distance between any personal relationships and the interviews he did. In fact, one of the things back to interviewing that I really admired about Lou is he had a terrific way of asking difficult questions without being accusatory. I'm not good at that. If I have a hard question for somebody, to my ear, it frequently comes out as maybe more critical than I intended. And then the person tends to clam up. Lou was a friendlier interviewer and probably got better answers as a result.
Talk about some of those colleagues. You've Charles Robinson, Lou, like you've had a murderer's row of talented public broadcasting reporters. Some high moments of your experience there. What's it feel like working with people as committed to public television as you?
Well, we're fortunate to have that group, Charles and Sue Copen and Nancy Yamada. Between the four of us, I think we have like 400 years of experience covering the legislature. I mean, it's interesting to me how the press room has changed. When you look at it from a 30,000 foot level, over the first thing I ever covered in Annapolis was the special session 1985 when the savings and loan crisis happened. And if you had looked at the press room in those days, you would have seen it was the same offices. There was you walk down that hall in the basement, the Baltimore Sun, the Washington Post, UPI used to have an office, that's gone, but the AP, the radio reporters on the right, and then the big press room where everybody else was. And the number of people down there today probably isn't that different from the number of people that you saw down there 30, 40 years ago. I think it's a little bit different. Fewer regional publications. Go ahead.
Yeah, fewer regional publications. It's sort of decentralized, right? So instead of Josh Kurtz at the Gazette, he's got his own news organization with a couple people. Yeah, that's an interesting
exactly.
point.
And, right. That's taken up a lot of the slack, and that's filled in a lot of the empty space. I think we're really fortunate. I mean, there's two big city newspapers. The Sun is diminished. The Washington Post is doing well. They both still have strong commitments to covering the legislature. I think other state capitals, from what I've heard, it's a lot different, and their press rooms are really empty.
Well, you know, I had a difficult year last year. I was on the hunt for the Baltimore Sun with Ted Venatoulis and Stuart Bain, and we got close. We almost got close on Tribune, the entire deal, and then we migrated into this other space where Ted and Stuart led, which is this nonprofit news effort. And I got to tell you, which is it's going to be the Baltimore Banner. It was tough for me because I've lost a grandfather, I've lost friends, but I've never lost somebody I was in a foxhole with in the middle of a campaign or a middle of an effort. And that's what happened with Ted. But I want to tell MPT, I want to tell you, Jeff, that as soon as the conversation switched away from Tribune to coming back home to Baltimore and doing something in the nonprofit space, the first names that Ted mentioned were yours and public television, as well as YPR. I mean, he was very committed to sort of connecting you all into the conversation about local news first, above, before the Sun, before the Post, before any of those thought leaders. He wanted to know what Maryland Public Television thought about these the future of local news. And I just can't thank you for being that kind of beacon for us. Can't thank you enough for being that kind of beacon for us.
You know, the loss of Ted hit everybody hard. I never covered him as a reporter when he was Baltimore County executive. But when I was at Channel 11, he was our political analyst. So he was sort of a colleague, and he always had an answer for everything. And his commitment, his experience as a publisher, and his commitment to local news and really being the driving force between now the Venatulis Institute and the Baltimore Banner. I can't wait to see how it turns out. And, you know, Ted was on the board of the Maryland Public Broadcasting Commission. And I think that's where a lot of his insights into membership business models came from. I can't wait to see what you all do with it. And really sad to see that Ted won't be a part of it.
This is the tricky thing about being in the promotion and publicity game, is that you want to talk about these things like the Baltimore Banner and the Venatulis Institute, but I need to remind people, this is not my thing. This is Baltimore's thing. This is really an opportunity for all of Baltimore and all the newsmakers out there to start with a clean slate and a nonprofit model and make it what Baltimore wants to make it, not what Ted. I mean, Ted got us where we are, but what Ted wanted, I remember I told Ted, I said, you know, we have all these factions in Baltimore and, you know, there's some tribalism in Baltimore. And Ted said, no, there's not, Damien. It was like the only time he was straight up with me, like, you know, stern with me. And he goes, no, we can all be one. It's one community. We're one Baltimore. We all have very similar interests. We just don't have a way of sharing those things. So he was very, very stern. And
well, we're a little bit tribal in where you went to high school, though. If 40 years after the fact, we're still talking about that.
That's fair. That's very fair. You know, I went to Mount St. Joe and it was a great time. And I always remember going to Gilman for football games. And it was like going to a Roman Coliseum or something. It was the most beautiful thing I had ever seen. You got to watch out for a great new pitcher for the Gilman, you're still the Greyhounds, right?
Of course.
You got a young kid named Jake Moeller out of your Patapsco River Valley there on the Catonsville side. He's the son of the grandson of the former Baltimore County executive. So a lot of us got eyes on that freshman. He's a remarkable talent. So maybe we can catch a game together this year, Jeff.
That'd be a lot of fun. And I will follow his career. We've had, Gilman's been sending people to the pros. And, when I was there, I was the nerdy guy in the newspaper office. No athletic talent whatsoever. Relegated to the intramural tennis team.
What kind of advice do you have for people like me who are, we're certainly not news people, we're not journalists, but we're online, we're sharing information, we're interviewing people. What kind of advice do you have for the amateurs out there that are trying to pick up some of the space they feel is missing or could add some value to? Any advice for folks like us on the fringe of the media space?
You know, that's a really interesting question. I'd have to think a little more, but the big change, the big driver of what's been happening in media, of course, is the internet. And it destroyed the newspaper business because they lost all of their classified advertising revenue. They lost that to various eBay and Craigslist and other websites like that. At the same time, the barriers to entry have gone away. Anybody can start a news site, a blog, and that's certainly where the future is going to be. You're not going to need a TV transmitter. You're not going to need a newspaper printing press. And I really think that's ultimately at the root of the polarization of the media. It was the fragmentation first. No barriers to entry. Anybody can start up anything. And once you have so many sources out there, so many TV channels in the 500 channel universe, how do you get noticed? Well, you can get noticed by being loud, or you can get noticed by being partisan. And I really think the forces, especially in national media, where you're either on the left or you're on the right, and there's nobody except, thankfully, us in public TV that's work in the middle. So I think there's tremendous opportunities to do something. The cost of any sort of equipment, publishing apparatus, video apparatus has fallen close to zero. And I think, you know, it's the way it is now. It's sort of like the New York newspaper wars of the Pulitzer and Hearst era, where you had, I think it was 13 different papers competing for attention, and it was partisan and it was yellow journalism. We may be in for that again, but there is precedent for it, and I think the Republic will survive.
Well, thankfully, we've got Jeff Salkin. Thankfully, we've got State Circle. Thankfully, we have Charles Robinson and the whole gang of people committed to real statewide coverage of our Annapolis ecosystem and news all across the state. Jeff, we can't thank you enough for being you, because you bind us together in a special kind of way, in that we all know we can't lay a glove on you.
Damien, you do a great job as an interviewer. It was fun talking with you.
Oh, that's a high honor, but I know you're too polite. Hey, tell me Howard County question. We're both from the Patapsco River Valley. I cheat and call it the Patapsco River Valley because I'm from the Catonsville side and the Ellicott City side and Elk Ridge side. Talk to me about how you ended up in Howard County, and tell me about your favorite place to eat out there, unless that's going to get you in too much trouble.
Oh, gosh, I have to think about the favorite place to eat. But the quick story of how we wound up here, we were living the Timonium area, and I wound up working. I was out of the journalism business for a couple of years, more or less. It's a little more complicated than that. But I wound up working for the NASDAQ stock market as a media guy, as a PR guy. And they were headquartered on K Street at the time. And the commute from Timonium to K Street turns out to be a little difficult. That was tough. So we moved to Howard County. Initially, we were in the Elk Ridge area, and we've been in Columbia, Clarksville for the last 25 years.
So I'm going to solve it for you. I'm going to solve it for you then. Daniel's is one of the only outdoor bars in America. They actually have lovely sandwiches. It's right there on Route 1. They're doing amazing things over there. I hope you can check it out. Over there, there's a bunch of new restaurants and great stuff happening in downtown Columbia right next to Meriwether. So that's my plug. Shameless. See, Jeff, you don't have to do that.
No, it's we're non-commercial, so we're above all that. I mean, the other thing, if you're getting off a plane at BWI, is the Guinness Brewery, which is just 5 minutes from there, down the road from your biker bar. But it's a really cool place.
It is an amazing place, and we have that all to ourselves. I think Maryland makes all the blonde that's distributed in the United States right there out of Relay, Maryland, right across from Elk Ridge, Maryland. Jeff Salkin, thank you so much for talking with us. We, KO Public Affairs Center, Maryland, been big viewers and watchers for a long time and hope to remain so.
Damien, appreciate the time. This was fun. Thank you.
You're the best looking 40-year-old in the business. Thank you. 40 years. 40 years of State Circle, 30 years of them with Jeff Salkin. Thanks so much. All right. Too many platitudes, right, Jeff?